He is known as the odd man out on city council, the outspoken, the urbanist, the green thinker, Councillor Dave Braden from Ward 14.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. So do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
We're in studio today with Dave Braden. He's counselor for Ward 14, but pretty soon he will be counselor for no ward because he's dropped out of everything. Dave Braden was throwing his hat into the ring for mayor, and he changed his mind on that, and we're going to ask him why in a minute. He also decided to no longer run as a counselor for his ward, and we're going to ask him about that too. Welcome to the studio, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, and I'm really pleased that you came in today. Now, you want to just tell us why you dropped out?
I think that in looking back, I've been involved in politics for 15 years. There's a time and a place, I think, and I've spent the best part of my adult life involved in this. It's good to think that there's change and evolution and other people can come along and do perhaps a better job than you've done before. So I was prepared to walk away and to do something else, and I'm a busy person with a lot of interests. What happened was I didn't see anybody coming that I thought could win this race against the incumbent mayor, and I thought it was particularly important to put the issues on the table and to let the citizens really know what those issues were and then decide, hopefully along the lines of the issues, who should be the mayor. So when nobody was in by Labor Day weekend, I gave it some time because I didn't want to be there. I jumped in. Lo and behold, somebody else jumped in immediately after me.
And that's jumping into the mayor's seat. But why give up
counselor? My interest was at this point, I've not sat on the sidelines, but I've tried to do things as a member of council, not being better than or different from, but one of. And I think at this point, what Hamilton really needs is leadership. It doesn't just need one more vote within the 15. It needs real leadership. And I thought either I'm going to provide the leadership or I'm going to do business.
Okay. Now, I have watched some of the mayoral debates and the councillors' debates, and I got to tell you, Dave, that I'm actually frightened. There's nothing there. There's no content. The few people that have thrown their hat in don't seem to know the issues. In fact, I was so upset watching it on Cable 14, I got off my bed, out the door, and down to City Hall to ask a question of Fred Eisenberger. One candidate was completely silent. Diane Elms seemed to know a bit about what was going on, seemed to know some of the issues, but was talked down incessantly, and it was just like a comedy show. It was just hysterically funny. You have to laugh.
I agree with you that it's so bad, but in fact, it's hard for me to laugh. It's so serious. I think the situation in Hamilton is, in fact, different from other municipalities. I mean, I don't want to unfairly criticize people, but Hamilton has not made a transition from being an industrial city to being a worldly city or a city that is or more progressive. It simply hasn't. And in fact, it won't move with the times, and that's one of the really scary issues. And to move with the times, we have to have leadership. And I believe also that one of the things that we need is a fairly balanced and comprehensive press that is ready to tell us. And that's a conventional press I'm talking about.
Yeah, mainstream media.
Mainstream media.
Which we are sadly lacking in the city.
That's right. I mean, just to jump right to the sort of the conclusion here. If CBC Radio was in this town, we wouldn't have the same government, and we would be dealing with the issues.
That's right. You know, as a member of the alternative media and independent media, I am constantly sending little audio bites into Toronto just to get news out. We are isolated here, owned by a corporation. It still doesn't give even a balanced opinion. Yeah. And, you know, like I say this and I'll say this again, when I do sit there for hours and hours and hours during a debate and watching everything, what the public citizens of Hamilton get is 3 minutes or 600 words or the odd little bit in View magazine if it's going that direction that particular week. We are sadly and sorely misinformed in this city. So let's tell people what really is going on at City Hall.
If people had any idea what the financial situation was in the city and how the deal-making that is either in council or behind closed doors in council really went on. Those that are skeptics would have that negative concept reinforced very strongly.
Because I remember not that long ago, we were in debt. What happened to that?
Well, the debt just isn't getting any play these days. The debt is going to be much, much worse next year than it is now. What you hear from the city staff and then reiterated by the conventional mainstream press is that things are fine. Let me just put it into a context that I think all of us that are concerned with balancing our budgets at home or in business would understand. We have an infrastructure problem in the city of Hamilton right now that I can describe this way. We need an additional, this year, $100 million to keep the present assets of this city in reasonable condition. So, and that doesn't include, at this point, the water and sewer, because those things are paid for by rates and by the homeowners that are buying water and then paying to have their sewage taken away. So that's $100 million more per year we need this year, and we will need for the rest of our lives. So that's a sustainable limit on today's dollars. Of that $100 million, we are looking at dealing with a tiny fraction, which means that next year it'll be $100 million plus sort of the compound interest from this year.
Is that going to mean we're going to have another winter of sewers flooding people's basements, pipes blowing up?
Well, what it means is that we have an overwhelming financial problem that we don't know how to deal with. And one of the things that at least I've been successful in is getting that number documented and assessed. And apparently the Hamilton staff have now come up with a sort of a formula to prove this. And they're going across the country sort of selling this idea, because the first place you have to start is you have to know what's going on. So, again, there's a role for the mainstream press, and if it's not the mainstream press, that it needs to be outlets like this that will tell the people in the city of Hamilton what's really going on. So that's the first financial problem that relates to the debt. The second one is that we are overspending our revenues every year. We've got it down from about $90 million on average in four of the last 5 years to down to about $70 million. So we're only overspending, the revenues we're taking in by about $70 million a year. If you add the $70 million plus the $100 million for infrastructure, it's $170. It means we have to increase taxes today by 34%. And nobody is willing to do that. And in fact, we believe that there are many people that simply won't be able to pay. Let me tell you about something about the tax base that we don't understand. And we, meaning the vast majority of the people that not only listen to this station, but pay their taxes. The economic development sort of strategy for this city, if you look at what has actually been happening, is nothing to do with creating jobs, but it's been to do with building new houses mm-hmm. and suburban sprawl. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, has been the main direction of this city for the past 30 years. We have had independent consultants that we have hired, hoping that they're going to say something nice, which have come back and basically condemned our record by saying, yep, we haven't done anything.
We're going backwards.
That's right. No city wants to, politicians don't like that word, backwards. So they want to pretend that building new houses is something positive. They think that strictly numbers are important as opposed to the quality of life or the quality of those numbers.
But the numbers don't make any sense when the houses are for a certain bracket only when you're building new infrastructure, when your old infrastructure is polluting the downtown even more.
Yeah, I think normal people realize that everybody needs balance. So we need a share of the rich houses because the rich people might be investing here. We need a share of the poor houses because there's some people that for whatever reason simply can't look after their own affairs, and we need to help them.
Well, they can't look after their affairs because if you're ill and you're on a pension, you don't get enough income to pay what is even required for a one-bedroom apartment rent.
I think what we need to do is somehow, amongst the negativity and the disenfranchisement of the voters and the complete dysfunction of the council.
Yeah. Let's talk about dysfunctional council. You know, I do believe that we are the only municipal council that actually had people take over the council chambers in protest. That says something, you know? That says something when you have to have a citizens' action group set themselves up at the press bench and they are the only truly reliable source of information for people who can't go down to City Hall. That says something right there.
You wonder if it's actually a sort of a practiced strategy from those that are in power and that want to maintain power to promote apathy and to disenfranchise citizens, to avoid sort of real learning and real progress, and to make people feel completely incompetent and that they have no sort of value or there's nothing that they can do to effect change.
Well, it's insulting.
It's insulting. I need to say that you need to be positive. I've been an individual who has not accepted money for a number of elections from anyone, and I've been lucky enough to get elected. The views that I have, I think, are extremely progressive views, if I can say so myself.
Well, you call them progressive. I call them, reality.
From
the news that I watch and see.
But reality in this town would probably be seen as progressive, at least by many. But there is such a huge force, and it's very strong, to curtail intelligence, to curtail sort of bright new ideas, to sort of stomp on people or alienate people who really do have good ideas and want to see them come to fruition.
Yeah, they don't listen to the people. You
get attacked.
Yep.
And it's part of the approach of the council. Now, council is just a bunch of individuals, but I think a lot of the culture of the council lies with the direction of the mayor's office. And unfortunately, we have stepped back a whole long way. In 3 years, I have never seen in 15 years the amount of negative change that's happened.
Isn't it amazing?
In the past 3 years.
People tell me he didn't choose to run for mayor, Larry Dianne, you were speaking about, that he was basically requested to run by his developer friends. And, of course, most of our listeners know about the Joanna Chapman situation, having to force it into the courts for the overpayments.
Yeah.
And we've been dealing with a bunch of developers running City Hall for the last 30 years and picking and choosing who will get into power, and therefore we get the bylaws and the zoning change and our country turns into suburbs.
I tend to agree with that sort of negative sentiment. I don't think it's clear if the mayor is a puppet for some business interests, if it's perhaps the other way around. Either so, there's a partnership there.
So who does he serve?
That's interesting. We actually take an oath at the beginning, soon after we're elected, to do what we think is the best for our community, and to we're supposed to take that seriously. And I think in most cases, people do. But there's an expectation now that's developed in this particular municipality. It seems to be that there's a whole lot of tolerance internally. So if you're in the government like I am, there's a lot of tolerance for this sort of serious game playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you by an example, because I think you always need an example.
Okay.
Everybody knew with regard to the mayor's campaign expenses and the concerns about the legality of those expenses, or if the appropriateness of those expenses, mm-hmm. that really we needed to get to the bottom of this. This thing was not just an embarrassment to the mayor. It certainly was an embarrassment to all members of council, probably to some staff members, and in fact to the city at large. When council was then presented with the information from the woman from Dundas who had taken her time to look into the expenses and how they in fact were recorded, according to our oath that councillors take soon after they're elected, we are to vote for what is the right thing to do. And we are not to be biased and not to be personally supportive to any particular person, but we are to do what's right. And
was the right thing, Dave?
Well, the right thing was obviously to have the person that was going to assess the legitimacy of those expenses to have it done, and for council to have it done, for council to take the leadership and have those figures audited. There was only one person on our council that voted to have those records audited.
And who was that?
Oh, that happened to be me.
Sorry?
So what this example proves is that all of the other members of council, for whatever reason, did not do what their oath implied and what they promised to do. And the interpretation, I think, of that is that the culture is so strong here to preserve this idea, it's really a disguise, of unity, that people were doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons.
I think they were afraid.
Well, they are afraid, but in fact, we run on this job to do the right thing. If you listen to the people that are running, they're a new voice to do things right, to add change. Here we have 15 people sitting around a table, and I'm not sure how many there were that night. And of those 15, one person devoted to do the right thing, and the other people were reluctant. And I can agree that it's difficult to vote against one of your own, but in fact, that's what you run for. That's a very good example, I think, to show how the government strictly does not do what it needs to do.
It's not democracy.
Yeah.
How can we trust our government to stand up for our views if they're worried about what their opinion's going to do to their fellow councillor?
Let me talk about trust. I'm a business person and come from a family that business is important. If the head of any group is seen to be untrustworthy, And I think that clearly that's how I read the situation. Other similar groups or business interests simply don't want to come here. People talk here about why is it that businesses aren't coming? And the cheap, simple answer is they say that there's no land that's ready for businesses. But they're vacant properties. I mean, there's lots of opportunity here if you want. There may not be the perfect property.
Well, that's the politically correct thing to say.
That's right.
Well, but what is the truth? The
truth is, if you're a successful business person or you work for a successful business, you want to put that business in somewhere where you are proud of it and where you think it's going to make money. Make no mistake. The reason that most businesses are here is to make money, because that's how this world works, like it or not. So this is the one of the only communities. If I draw a circle around 50 miles of Hamilton, this is probably one of the only communities that I wouldn't look at.
But we're supposed to be so strategically important. Our location is great. We needed the Red Hill Expressway because of our location. The Mid-Penn's coming through.
Again, I think we have to look at this fairly. If you just want to listen to, you know, a particular radio show, or you want to look at very, very oversimplistic answers that said, you know, build the expressway and jobs will come, I hope that people will look back and see, you know, none of this stuff that has been promised is happening other than taxes are going up.
One of the points that I heard and I hear constantly in the debates is how much progress the city's seen since Mayor Larry Dianney took the reins in the last 3 years. The expressway is rolling. We've got this Summit Park East is going. All these other developments are happening.
Well, I mean, again, those guys are so good at talking. And some people might be fooled into thinking that, you know, that really is progress. I think if you listen, you hear, one, that that we're told that our house is in order and our financial house is just anything but in order. And the second thing is the only thing we can really talk about is our residential development. Now, there's some commercial development that goes along with it. Residential development and power centers don't make a community or make a city. You know, when we talk about intelligent people and commitment, there is nothing wrong with the intelligence of our mayor. He's a bright guy.
Well, then why is he doing what he's doing?
Well, and I think the issue people need to ask him is, where's the real commitment? I think that the people of Hamilton need to wake up a little bit and see.
They're not getting the information, and unless they don't work and have the time in the day to go down there and sit and listen to 4 to 6 hours of discussion, the mayor is giving an argument saying, for business to start, we have to have places for people to live.
There's always an ounce of truth in a lot of the statements that are being made, including the editorials in the mainstream newspaper. But I think the bigger picture is, what really needs to happen here? I tell you something that most people don't know, and the city is reluctant to give this any airtime, but we know factually from specific local studies, and we also from general research studies, that by and large, for every new house of any kind, whether it's a townhouse or a semi-detached house, a single-family house or an apartment, that every one we build in a greenfield area, in fact, requires more a direct and indirect cost to look after than it provides in taxes. What that means is that every single new house we build raises everybody else's taxes.
Yep.
That's not something that most people understand, and it's certainly not what this city wants to explain.
How will we change that?
We have to get that word out, and really, it goes back to the one of the reasons that I dropped out of the mayor's race. If the mainstream press does not tell the people what, in fact, we think they need to know, so that we can share that information, when people realize that the economic development program we've had is just to build subdivisions, and now we're finding out that every time we build a new subdivision, it's just costing us more money. So we know that every unit we build in Binbrook is just craziness.
Yep.
Because the cost of looking after that development so far away, and let me just deviate for a second. When Binbrook got approved as a potential settlement area serviced by sewers, there was a strong commitment. I was at the committee room that it would be a sustainable community. Mm-hmm. And by and large, it was trying to keep in line a relationship between jobs and adults. So it wasn't a one-to-one relationship, but two adults in a family, on average, 1.5 people of those two working. We were to have some number close to that 1.5 per household for local jobs. So we wanted to set aside land so that jobs could be local, so that people could bike or walk or take public transit. Now, there isn't public transit, of course, in Binbrook. It's very interesting that within about 2 years, those developments that are dominated by a couple of developers, and everybody would recognize their names. It's very interesting, from the very strong commitment given at the council meeting to what kind of relationships we would have between residences and employment, and lo and behold, there is now no land set aside. Okay. No, I don't mean in an absolute sense, but there's nothing to speak of.
Well, the mayor keeps going back to the airport, the Atropolis. That's where the development, that's where the jobs are going to go.
Well, let me talk about the Atropolis. Again, I apologize for the fact that city people are intentionally being treated like they're fools and they're not capable of thought. In the airport area, we had a meeting right after amalgamation. Bob Wade was the mayor. But I can remember hearing that there was a potential that the airport could be a significant driver to promote jobs. And there was approximately 750 acres around the airport that could easily be justified and we could work on. The problem was there were no services. And I started at that point saying, look, we can find, it looked like about $5 million would be enough to get some water and get some sewer and get some road capacity so that together we could offer some land immediately. So if there are businesses that either wanted to be near the airport or the airport was just an okay location, but it would be serviced or ready to accept the building of new buildings so that we could get some jobs. Early in 2001, it was made very clear we had to get going to get the benefit of industrial land and those wanting industrial land near the airport. In the now almost 6 years, really not much has got done, with a few exceptions, but really not much has got done, no major investments. But when it was discovered about 2 years ago that we had really no industrial land ready and we had no money in the bank ready to subsidize this, and the fact that if we didn't put our own money in, nothing would happen, it became terribly embarrassing. So I think what happened was, out of the blue, and out of the blue I presume is out of the city mayor's office or the city manager's office, because the initiative did not come from council. Out of the blue hatched this sort of a Hollywood idea about Aerotropolis. And instead of doing the 750 acres, which was realistic and probably affordable, in order to get some play, that's play in the press, and to try to buy some popularity among voters who they think weren't too smart, they talked about 3,000 acres for the airport.
Yeah, where does that come from?
It's a completely arbitrary. And rather than doing something realistic, they thought that they could talk about something that sounded good, but it only sounds good to people that really aren't very clever. Well, it did two things. One is, and for business people and for people that care about their community, it was just another form of alienation. The people in Ancaster were disgusted that here was this thing hatched. There was no study of need to say we need 3,000 acres. There is no credible plan about how it would be serviced. The amount of money to service it is astronomical, so they kept that kind of quiet and hidden. And they just talked about the idea. Well, we need jobs. Wouldn't this be great? But we've needed jobs, the consultants have said, for 25 years. We've been incompetent in 25 years to get those jobs and to lay the groundwork to get them. And now what's happened, and of course, you know, the mayor and the city manager and those of his supporters have tried to put a spin on that, you know, they won the Aerotropolis issue because it's now not going to Ontario Municipal Board. It now has to go to a thorough assessment.
Something they should have done in the first place before they brought it up.
Absolutely. This was the cart way before those. Well, it's just a political idea. I'm a planner. I mean, unless the economy is booming and doing something like what's happening in Calgary, where you really have to be proactive because demands and growth are just epidemic. Here, we didn't have any growth. Our problem is in terms of jobs. We got no growth. And in fact, the kind of jobs we have, in fact, on average, they're deteriorating. They're becoming more poorly paid jobs,
yeah.
Less good jobs.
Service jobs, below minimum wage.
Right. I mean, we are going straight downhill.
Okay, I just want to backtrack a little bit and fill in a few blanks. Those that have been paying attention to the show for the last 2 or 3 years, you'll remember what Mr. Braden's saying about the great debt that we had. And all of a sudden, it dropped off the radar. We aren't talking about debt. We don't have this big bill anymore. Then let's look at the 25-year plan and the Atropolis and how that won't work.
Well, let me start with this. Unfortunately, in the Hamilton sort of context, we end up starting with bad examples. When they started talking about the airport, we had been talking in the previous 2 or 3 years. We were talking about the need for an idea of what would happen if the price of energy, basically fossil fuel, does start to rise very, very quickly and what the consequences of that might be. No, the view of the city is, here he goes again, the glass is not even half full, the sky is falling. This is the kind of, of sort of demeaning, arrogant comments you get from somebody that wants to preserve a power base but doesn't want to deal with knowledge.
Well, peak oil doesn't happen in Hamilton. It'll happen everywhere else,
right,
not in Hamilton.
The details of this story are important.
Okay.
Finally, we got a commitment that I think people were simply forced to accept. It wasn't one that they wanted to do. The motion came from, I think, Sam Rula, that we would have a peak oil study to see what this sort of peak oil phenomenon was and how it might affect us. In the context of that discussion, we said, we need to have this information, we need to have it before budget starts, because if this thing is as serious as certainly I made it out to be, we would want to start perhaps alter the direction and then the priorities of our budget. So that's the reason we had to have it in advance. There was clear commitment to that. So let's say that we asked for the study in July and budget start in maybe September, but they really don't get going till more like Christmas. What happened in the process where there were delays? I kept repeatedly asking to say, what's the progress? And we were always told formally. And there's an obligation for the staff to, well, there should be, to informal session, treat me and the others on council honestly, and I think with respect.
Okay, I got to step in here. That the first for that study was not accepted.
Richard Gilbert, he is the author of the report, and he had some assistance from one or two other people. When I was told that, in fact, the city had received a draft report from Mr. Gilbert and that they had made some comments about it and returned it to him, it piqued my interest. And I can remember Brian McCaddy also, he heard this and thought, well, this sounds a little strange.
Yep.
So we asked for copies of the draft, and the city manager's response, which again may have an ounce of truth to it, but really was just an obstruction, was that the report didn't belong to the city. It was the intellectual property of the author.
Wow.
So I phoned the author up. Clearly, I found that we had a number of business associates in common. And he said, look, far as I'm concerned, you can have that study. This is not a problem. And I did these things formally and on the record. When I asked in council what the status of this draft report was, I've just said this, city said, well, we've sent the comments in. I immediately phoned Mr. Gilbert and said, they said, they've already sent you the copies. Do you have them?
It didn't get to the councillors. It never did.
Well, it didn't get to the councillors. The comments that the city staffer said were sent in were, in fact, not sent in. We waited a week and to find out if maybe they got hung up in the mail and Mr. Gilbert was going to Europe. So a week later, I phoned him just to confirm. I mean, Mr. Gilbert can see very clearly, he won't want to comment on this, that this whole issue was treated by the city manager and by the mayor as just a farce. They wanted to hush-hush the whole thing because it would, if there is going to be a serious change in the economic structure of our economy because of fuel and the availability of cheap fuel, one of the first things that could be affected, and everybody that is knowledgeable or interested knows this, is air travel, particular air freight.
The cost of the fuel.
That's right. It just won't become economical to send things. So what this demonstrates is that, in fact, the city is not running in an honorable way. It's not managing with integrity. The professionalism is gone. I mean, for a city staffer to come up at council and to very clearly lie to me in that council, and then for the mainstream press to allow that to happen. I mean, the mainstream press sees themselves as the official opposition. So the whole thing is a plot to denounce the reality of a growing concern and to sort of step in line and be a bit of a puppet for whatever these new propaganda issues are that are emanating from the first floor of City Hall. And the first floor is the city manager and the mayor.
Playing devil's advocate, why would the mayor do this?
I can't speak for the mayor and how he thinks. I do respect his intellect, but I can't understand other than say, well, this is politics. I think that the mayor's record was particularly poor. In economic development, which he sees, I think, as something that needs to be important, this was a way of...
No bad news.
Right. No bad news. No dealing with reality.
Okay.
Let's just get off the hook. And coming along saying, we're going to have 3,000 acres for the airport.
Yep.
That's going to try to put these guys at bay. Then when peak oil came, and for those that might have forgotten, basically what it said is the chances are better than 50-50 that within 10 to 15 years, the price of electricity and the price of fossil fuel that we normally have in our life with regard to, you know, gas at the pump or fuel for our oil furnaces is going to be four times what it is today. Four times in 10 to 15 years.
Just by the number of people that even the mayor admits is coming to this community, if you just think of it that way, with our current prices.
I mean, it's really threatening. Keep in mind in Hamilton, we had problems moving from a primary industry town to a sort of a worldly or a globally competitive town. We've never made that change yet.
I heard Clive Doucette give a speech saying that cities now are not the same as they were. The times have really evolved. Cities can no longer be a manufacturing, independent little society. They're part of the global economy now.
Well, I mean, I think that increasingly they are, and it's difficult to see how we're going to move from where we are to how we're going to fit in, and if we're going to have to compete sort of evenly, or if we're going to take some special advantages we have here and turn those advantages into real economic advantages.
Well,
and real...
the university itself. We have a lot of people in the city are employed at the hospital. A lot of people are employed at the university.
Well, let me talk about the university. I mean, it just makes sense. Here in this city, the way I read it, not too long ago, I'll call them the master fathers. I think it was the president and the people, the couple of VPs and some other people probably in the graduate school of business, invited the city councilors down to MAC just to try to promote a kind of, if not friendship, at least a familiarity with the two institutions, one being the city, one being the university. I can tell you without hesitation that the university McMaster is seen as a bit of a threat because they're smart people that have real ideas and they're at the forefront. They are the leaders. In our case, the city fathers are the ones that are regressive. They don't want to be seen to be foolish. They really don't want to associate with McMaster.
So you're saying the city is not working with McMaster no matter what approach?
If we were, it would be evident. There are isolated examples. We're providing the courthouse, McMaster to use as it sees fit. And we put a substantial grant into the former Westinghouse plant on Longwood Road. What I'm looking for is cooperation. For example, the status of McMaster didn't go up too far when 100 profs signed something that says, you know, it's a stupid idea to build a Red Hill Expressway. Right? The city doesn't want to hear about what intelligent people have to say when they have a broader view and a much more comprehensive view than maybe city politicians or city staff.
They're okay to teach their kids, but they're not okay to listen to when it comes to urban planning.
Right. Let me just take the example of the Lister Block. The Lister Block, for your listeners, is owned by the Leuna Union Group. It's a downtown building that has a very interesting history and is seen to be an important, although dilapidated, building on James Street North. The city decided to have an agreement with the Leona Group to rent space at about double what the normal high-quality office space is to that group. And in a sense, the city is paying for the whole building, but we're only renting a part of it for a shorter period of time. Originally, it was 15 years. One of the things that I admire about a university is that you can get people who really can think clearly. Had we simply said to the university, we have $15 million to spare to work to invest downtown. What we want to do is create as much bang for the buck, as much value as we can by inserting this money into the downtown to see what kind of proposals first we might get, but what kind of things will actually work the best to spin off, in fact, other investment. So in other words, in the Lister proposal, we took one business, basically one building, and we put $10 to $15 million in excess money into that one project. When I speak to business people who have investment downtown, they are saying, as I would say, why didn't you put a proposal on the table? Because maybe, in fact, 15 people or maybe two sides of two blocks could have shared that money and made a commitment to then, for every $100,000 they got, invest maybe $300,000. So instead of clearing up one building, we could have cleaned up perhaps two blocks.
Well, what you're giving is a prime example of how this city's been working the last 3 or 4 years. There is no open bidding.
Well, there is not. This is a sole source thing that's coming from one particular area. This doesn't stand anywhere near the test of investigation. And then, to make matters worse, there is an association between that business and political campaigns. Right. And it's a reality. So if you are a bit of a cynic, and there is every reason based on the history of this city why people are becoming cynical, if they see that for the 10,000 properties downtown that get nothing and one property gets $15 million, it's pretty easy to become a cynic.
Well, a lot of people don't get the information, as we've said, and they're making judgments based on misinformation. And what we need to do, this station, of course, CFMU, is constantly trying to get some of the news that the mainstream media does not present through this show, The Other Side. But what we also need to do is think about some positive action we need to do. Yeah. There are a lot of activist groups in this.
Well, I think the one thing is that I think people really have had enough. I think the status quo political culture is hoping to find their best balance for intimidating and bullying and disenfranchising and just making people apathetic.
Yep.
And really, they're doing a great job.
Yep. Steal your house, threats of jail.
Or as in the conventional press, not getting any coverage. You know, yeah. There's a woman running for the mayor position who's female.
Diane Elms, I think her name is.
Right?
She's just starting to figure things out, but where is her media?
That's right. Yeah. What I wanted to provide, and lots of people can provide this, is a sense of honor, of trust, of respect. What I want to do is have someone that I think actually believes what they're talking about.
Do we have anybody running that does, do they?
Well, I can only comment on the person that is there now, and frankly, I'm completely disillusioned with that. I think that, you have to give people a chance. You hope that if given the opportunity, people will step up to the plate. But again, I use the example of the audit. If 14 people out of 15 did not do what they know is the right thing to do, there is an underlying problem of a culture or a behavior here we have to get to.
Yes, I don't think Hamilton's exclusive when it comes to those kinds of things.
No, but I think it's much worse. I mean, I was involved in a smaller government before. This is absolutely ridiculous. And it sends such a bad message. The one thing I'm going to enjoy about being retired from this particular activity is that I then can surround myself with people, one, that I can trust, and two, that are positive.
And have integrity back. We've got a problem with trust. So let's talk about, with the activist group. Dave, what are some of the questions you think, in your experience, that people should be asking?
I think this poverty issue, especially here in Hamilton, needs a lot of understanding, a lot of commitment, and it's going to take a lot of risk. And while I've heard the idea that poverty doesn't take money, I think in this situation it will require a lot of money, and it'll be consistent money.
We're wasting a lot of money.
Well, we may be. We may have, as I've heard people say, the sort of a poverty industry here, yeah. All sorts of things in terms of grants. The
nothing's getting to the street. If I don't see a person that's homeless having a better life within 5 years of a plan, then nothing's happening.
We get caught on tangents, especially politicians. The other day there was a debate about making sure that there was a fair wage policy. Well, I agree with the concept of a fair wage policy. We have very expensive wages in some of our industries in this particular town. For instance, in the city, we pay our workers at the city very, very well. There is not any interest in looking at the wages that we pay ourselves, that's myself included, or our assistants. Our wages appear to be a sacred cow here. In fact, if you get a job for the city, I don't see how you could earn less than $35,000 a year unless it's summertime work.
Then the city better start hiring the poor.
There are changes happening. There are some good people that got on council recently. People that are elected, that are on council at the present time, that are prepared to speak their mind in a way that they're not intimidated or they're not being effectively bullied. So they're putting real ideas on the table. And the change starts with ideas, and hopefully if they're good ideas, they get mulled over, and then some action through commitment follows. In the past, I think a few years ago, there was a lack of people that were willing to take the risk to put good ideas on the table. So I think this is getting better understood. What we in the minority think, those of us that value education and learning and preparation for taking risk, see is that there are more and more good people that are willing to accept that kind of stance. We are always being challenged by those that are trying to demean us or intimidate us or bully us or whatever else it is. And I use that word bullying appropriately. So I think that the number of good candidates and potential good counselors is looking good.
We have a lot of positive activists that would be willing to stand behind such counselors too.
Right. That's another good thing about this. I think the people are so frustrated, and this is the everyday citizenry, that there are a number of groups getting established, and some are very grassroots, and some are with privileged people, and some less. I mean, at the one end, The whole issue of the group known as the Hamilton for Progressive Development, there is a business group that really in the past has had nothing to do with politics, wants to be separate from. This is a business community. And they were so disgusted and so threatened by the lack of planning and the seriousness of the impact of what this Aerotropolis thing might look like, that out of nowhere, they got established. They became very credible. They were open. They set a good example of how government ought to be. So I think citizenry is now saying, we're just waiting for one more mini crisis or one more threat, and a whole new group is going to evolve. For people like me who have brought some, I think, real ideas to the table, the reaction of the first floor of City Hall is to denigrate and to demean
and to criticize. Yeah, they want to
personally shut you down. Oh, absolutely. Anybody that has some good ideas that don't fit their agenda. Are the politicians prepared to spend money on poverty, on reducing poverty, especially for the long term? And if they are, what are they prepared not to study? Because if you simply say, I'm going to lower taxes or we're going to spend $5 million on poverty, you have to at the same time say, where are you going to get that money from?
Well, they are. They've given hundreds of thousands of dollars to the round table.
I know that's nothing. I mean, if we're going to really deal with poverty, if we're going to deal with housing and we're going to deal with nutrition and we're going to deal with jobs, are we prepared to ensure that every kid that comes to school hungry is going to get a hot meal? I mean, that's a very tangible thing. It's a very needed thing. I've got a member of my family that is teaching in a area in downtown, lower town as opposed to downtown, where people are not coming to school adequately clothed and certainly not coming adequately fed. This is the situation, and we need to start somewhere. It would seem to me having a nutritious food in your belly is a good place to start.
Housing is a big start, too, but a lot of that is provincial mandated.
Well, can I talk about housing? And again, I want to talk about ideas that we can do. I'm tired of complaining. We got lots to complain about. But we're going to build 63 new townhouse units at some location in Upper Stony Creek called Bridgewater Court.
Yeah, that was a given from 5-6 years ago.
Right. Well, it's supposed to happen. But I just tell you, because I want to, but when I look at myself in the mirror, I want to be able to say, I am doing something about this problem. So I've offered the city to run that project for $1 and to build the most efficient housing in North America at the standard for the city of Hamilton.
And
I said to the city, I will run this project, and I will get volunteers, and I will bring the cost of this project about 5 or 10% below what it costs to build minimum housing. So, what I want to differentiate, because as you might know, I'm involved in energy conservation. Instead of building houses in which at the end of the month the poor may not, in fact, pay their heating bill at the end of the month, I want to build houses where the heating bill is inconsequential.
Energy-efficient housing.
Yep, so we're going to build housing for the poor, which we all know we need, but then we're going to build it so that it has no heating requirements or next to none, because it's the poor that need the benefit of energy conservation. It's not me. I can afford $2 a
I have to ask,
oil.
Is that totally controlled by the city, and how much of that project is still controlled by the province?
Well, the province is providing the land either at a dollar or something. Okay. Habitat for Humanity is in, and I'm a founding member. When you come along to this city and you say, I'm going to solve this problem, and I'm going to save you money, but not only now, but we're going to build better housing that has a much higher sort of quality of life and longevity. So instead of building a house that's going to be obsolete in 22 years, these houses probably are pretty good for 50. We put all that up, and the city can't act. And one of the reasons the city can't act is it just simply doesn't know how to act progressively without a whole lot of delay. And second of all, it has a sort of ego problem. It doesn't want anybody else to get some credit for doing something good. It's a very, very selfish organization.
I'm sure they can script this in a way that would make them beneficial.
Yeah, I told them I'd make this look better and smarter and more frugal than anything else.
How do we bring some of the stuff that you're talking about out into the open in front of public?
I think you have to ask them a question they can't talk around. In other words, if it's the hot meal, and somebody, and I'm sure the public health department could figure out that perhaps 25% of the people are coming without a hot meal, for breakfast or for lunch, and that they need it, and there should be a price to that. So let's say the price is $6.5 million a year to ensure that children get a decent meal. We need to know if people are going to do it.
Heard the head of the Community and Social Services, Joanne Prowse, flatly state to one of the poverty groups, don't expect any more money from the city. We're tapped.
Well, and that's the whole thing. If the city is so arrogant to say, we can't do this, if we got money to try to win the Commonwealth Games or to put on fancy golf tournaments or, you know, to give ourselves a raise, we get automatic raises. It's quite unusual.
Nobody knows that.
We get automatic raises every year, even counselors, just for the record.
We should make public the salaries of all staff, perhaps.
Maybe, because we are basically part of the same community. We somehow have to make this work. If it's only $6 million to feed everybody for a year, my goodness, I think if all the city workers gave up half, and it shouldn't be just the city workers, but if somehow we could sort of say, because you have to find the money, all of us want to earn more money than we're earning. But in fact, some of us are in fact earning enough. And it's those of us that are willing to say we earn enough that we need to share. We need to figure out a way. No one benefits.
Yeah.
When people are on the street or people are hungry.
Now you're talking about corporatism and greed, and that's a, you know.
I'm not even going across the greed. Well, most of us have an element of greed, I think. I do. I also am living, and I'm most aware of this, in a broader community. I don't want to live where there are people that are doing great and there are other people that are suffering. I mean, I get no pleasure. And I want to get pleasure in my life as I get older. And so we need to make sure that the vast majority, if not everybody, is doing better. We need to know if people that are running will have the confidence to stand up and do the right thing. Somehow they need to be asked a question. So when it's extremely unpopular to do the right thing, whether or not these people will have the courage to do so. And one of the ways you can tell this, if they are already aligned with those people that are in government that have proven that they have a lack of integrity or a lack of ethics or a lack of honesty. So that to me says everything. So there are a number of people I think that are running in this election who are really puppets for a particular mayoralty candidate. And to me, that just speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. Anybody that sort of says, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, our debt situation is fine, we got jobs coming, are either completely fools or they've been so indoctrinated that this whole thing is completely beyond them. We are really in a fairly tragic state, and it's just so frustrating and so sort of debilitating.
Okay, so the first thing is to recognize the truth. The second thing is to get that truth around, which is stations like myself and the Catch Group are trying to do. The third thing is to, once you're aware of the state and the situation, to stand up, to have the moral strength and fortitude to stand up in public and say, I don't think your idea is a good idea. But the fourth and most important thing is, what can they do?
One thing they really can do, which is really quite easy, is they can vote. And that's important. I think vote for somebody we did a difference. So at this point, I'm ready to say anybody but.
Anybody that's different and new and fresh.
That's right. We have a chance. If other people, including incumbents, have proven that they're not interested in fixing the situation, then we need to move. There are a number of people on council that they need to have a few more supporters. If I can mention, there's this woman, Julia Colic in Dundas.
Yes.
I mean, here's a person that is bright, that has done some things.
And has found out the reality of the poverty in Dundas.
Yeah, I mean,
asked for people to pay attention to that. She's amazing. Yeah.
Well, we need a lot more people like that. And her chances are probably good in Dundas, because Dundas sort of acts and votes like a community. They are interested in those things. There isn't a lot of turnover. It's not like a suburb. We need to get people with a brain and with some sort of compunction.
And people willing to listen to those that educate their children.
Yeah. You know, we're living now in a culture, in Hamilton in particular, where learning and sort of morality and education and life experience are all frowned on. What we're looking for is who will be a peon or a puppet for this less than honorable direction. That's the kind of people that a certain candidate wants to line up so that he, in fact, then can do whatever he wants.
So the reality is, in the last 3 years, no, we haven't really moved forward. We've actually moved backwards.
We're way backwards. I mean, the distrust, in terms of specific directions, Hamilton needs jobs.
Yep.
There is something it really needs. It can handle some gridlock. I mean, gridlock, you know, annoys everybody.
But
intellectual jobs. I mean, all sorts of jobs, but preferably jobs that aren't just flipping hamburgers or stocking the shelves.
Yeah.
We need those too, and we will always have those. But we need much more of the jobs in the middle towards the top. We're getting nowhere on there. When we have a city led by an individual who has now been found guilty and has the sort of the audacity to, when caught doing something wrong, to try to attack an individual in Dundas, while really he's the problem. Yeah. And she is merely the principled member of the citizenry that is doing the job that the mainstream press should have done. That's so true. The mainstream press will tell you off the record, if you know any reporters, the reporters will tell you, we got caught with our pants down. Joanna Chapman showed us what we should be doing, what the press has done. Instead of admitting this, and the lack of, I think, integrity of the press here is just disgraceful.
Well, I'm going to talk specifically about the Spectator, and I'm going to talk specifically one reporter, Nicole McIntyre, who now sits at the press bench, who has only been with the Spectator for 2 years, and therefore may not have awareness of the past patterns of how business is done in this city. But she has stated at the public forum with Clive Doucette that was put on by the Friends of Red Hill for an information situation on how do we move our city forward in the future. She says that there's a difference between the reporters and the editorial policy.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Okay. I agree that there is. And I'm thinking that journalists, there must be a base level of a sort of integrity they're supposed to have.
You can have all the integrity in the world, but if you are not informed, what are you going to write about?
I think that very soon, very quickly, with Joanna Chapman's activity, the newspaper could learn that, in fact, they missed the boat and they should do something about it. Now, I had one reporter come and tell me that because they dropped the ball at the beginning, they then were too proud to jump back in, right? So then what they chose was, well, that story we missed. Now the story is, why is Joanna Chapman going after the mayor?
Yeah, and paint her out to be the bad guy.
That's right.
From where I sit, this mainstream media is quite biased. They don't look at the full side of the picture. They don't step back and look enough. Yeah. And there's one conclusion that is common sense for anybody. You know, if the mayor was an honest person with integrity, had nothing to hide, had no hidden agenda, why did he put people through such a long, drawn-out, I can't show you my books, or I'll show you my books. Do you remember in the beginning, he says, my books and pages are open to anybody from the public right after he got elected. Come to my office, and I'll show you who my sponsors were, etc., donors were. I went, and no, you couldn't.
Mm. Well, let me tell you this. I mean, it's again, the in this whole idea about the mayor's activities with regard to the campaigning and then the follow-up investigation through the auditor and then through lawyers. It became evident to me that, and I never went to one of them because while I'm not a fan of the mayor's, I don't want this. This is, it's not a sort of a personal thing. I'm just sort of disgusted by his actions, and he dragged me down. I don't need anybody else to drag me down. I can make a fool of myself on my own. You know, the city was sending lawyers to every single court hearing. You know, I've asked for an assessment, a value of all of the court time spent that was caused by the mayor and his what I call shenanigans.
Yep.
Of course, I'm not getting that because now the administration of the city. In Wade's time, by and large, the city manager worked for the council. We now have a city manager who might as well be the executive assistant of the mayor. The city manager doesn't work for council.
Well, that's been proven a few times.
Right. Well,
the council doesn't know anything and ask for a report.
Yeah, and the city manager is making comments to me and commitments to me, and he just doesn't keep them. So we've got a thing that's completely out of whack. And the Spectator, I've made sure that the Spectator knows this, and the Spectator is not interested in covering it. I'll give you another example. I mean, it's a small thing, but it's an idea because I've confronted the Spectator, and they've said, you know, the news does the news is unbiased. So about 3 weeks ago, we have a committee of the whole meeting. We're having trouble getting a quorum, and a quorum is a minimum number of people that are required to start the meeting. And the reporter, and I don't need to mention who it was, but she did some investigation of those people that weren't at the meeting, so that precluded the meeting from starting on time. What were they doing? And a couple of counselors were in their office and I guess felt that their duties in the office were more important than coming to a meeting. That's their decision. But I brought to her attention where the mayor was. And the mayor was on a radio station being interviewed and apparently doing a combination of campaigning or telling what the city was doing. And so the Spectator knew that the mayor was, I think, for his own benefit, I'll make that assessment, spending his time away from his formal duties. And the mayor was the only one that I could see in the article that wasn't mentioned in terms of where his whereabouts.
Yeah, well, that's
not an editorial issue. That's a news issue in which the newspaper people are not treating everybody equally. I mean, I have never been treated equally or fairly by the Spectator. Never.
Well, that's why we have Catch at the Press Bench. And if you really want to know who's at meetings and all those details,
well, if people could start getting a hold of that Catch news service,
www.hamiltoncatch.org.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, people will start getting thoroughly upset, and Catch, in fact, will in the end, I think, bring down the Larry Dieneys of the world.
Well, they're just pointing out the facts.
Yeah, but that's right. You see, if we knew the facts, people wouldn't.
My argument is, and this is one reason why I keep doing this radio show, is the poor don't have access to computers.
Right. And well, I mean, I say things to people, and the Spectator hates this, and I haven't been sued yet, but you have to do something. You have to do something in your own small way, and then you have to try to be part of a bigger group to do something in a big way. And, well, people tell me that this is, not the way to handle this. It's one way. I actually don't read the local rag anymore. And I find that I feel better in the morning not reading it. There is too much negativity.
Okay, well, there's a real problem for our public though, and our voters. If they're feeling the same way, and they're not reading,
well, they ought to try this because boy, it helps on the recycling box taking it out.
So how are they going to get their information?
Well, they should read Catch. If you want negative information and you really want to pay for it, well, then I would continue with the local rag. But some of the little papers, if they have it, I hate to say it, but I actually read a Toronto paper on weekends now.
Yeah.
Because I want to somehow know what's going around, but I want some faith that what I'm reading is something to do with the truth.
Okay,
I don't care if they're a little biased, but I want to know what's going on.
Well, you said in the beginning of the show, if we had CBC Radio here, we wouldn't have such a problem.
What's amazing to me is I think so many people are saying exactly the same thing. So that's why I come down here to this station, and I hope people will. I don't expect them to take my point of view, but I expect them to try thinking, because there's a whole lot of people like me here who are disgusted with what's going on.
There is something wrong. We cannot deny there's something wrong, even if we hear people blowing the horn for what Mayor Larry Dieney has done. I mean, the bottom line is, if he was not trying to hide something, why did he not come forward in the first place? Why did he wait till it was in court? I don't know, third time or whatever, faced with 41 charges, and actually pled guilty to 4, and then said his integrity is intact. I'll never forget that, because how can you keep your integrity after you pled guilty to doing something that you know was a wrong thing to do? He's not a stupid man, as you pointed out.
No, he's certainly not.
He's not a newbie when it comes to politics, and I'm not saying this just to attack the man. I'm saying this because he has embarrassed me as a Hamiltonian, and I am fed up as a person who lives in this city, and that's all. He can, if he wants to change his tactics, I'd vote for him, but I don't trust him anymore.
Well, I think he's burned his bridges, and he lives in a sort of a fantasy world, but he's a person that, like perhaps like many other politicians, but I've rarely met them like this. He's interested in power. I'm interested in governance. I don't think he has any interest in governance at all. He just wants power.
People are in politics because of power. But
yeah.
I mean, that's fodder for another show. I want to thank current counselor for the moment, or another week or so, Dave Braden, for coming down into the studio and giving us some background information on what to look for when you're listening to the candidates talk about what they want to do for the city, and other candidates saying what they have done for the city. Ask questions. Don't let them run on with their poly talk about, I did this, I did that. The proof is in the pudding. We have 1 in 4 people in poverty in the city. I think that says volumes right there. Thank you very much for coming down. We're going to have Dave back. He has a very forward-thinking view of urban growth, and we need to hear that kind of information.
Thank you for having me, Maggie.
And just a couple of things to remind you about before we sign off at the end of the show. This Friday, November the 3rd, it's First Fridays at Melrose United Church, and they are playing Who Killed the Electric Car. And if you've listened to the show in the summer, you heard all about that topic. The car that actually worked, that the manufacturers took off the market because it worked. Dave Braden will be there. He'll be talking about this electric car. He's done some research on it. The movie starts at 6:30. I think it's a pay $5 or pay what you can. There's always a discussion afterwards. It's interesting. Lots of things going on Friday night, Friday, November the 3rd. Those involved with environmental issues in the city, they'll know that Betty Blaschel, the wife of Don McLean, passed away last week. What a great loss this is to the community. She was behind all of the websites that you see for ACT locally, Environment Hamilton, Friends of Red Hill. She will be greatly missed in this community. And if you would like to offer your words of celebration, there will be a memorial in Betty's honor at the Westdale United Church on Oval Road, and I think that is at 7:30. Contact Environment Hamilton if you need more details for that. I do hope you manage to get out there and express what a loss you will be for the community and give Dawn your best wishes. Sarah Harmer's in town as well Friday night. She's doing her Escarpment Blues documentary, and that is at the Stage Theater, I believe, in Hamilton Place. So many things going on at the same time. That's usually what happens in the city. I hope you get to some of them. If you're lucky, you can get to all of them and maybe stagger your evening. And this Thursday is Seeds of Hope, talking about how to put your plants and garden to bed, and you need to know that the frost has already hit. And next week, we will be back same time at 12 noon with the other side of the news. We'll be talking a little bit more about the upcoming election. Have a good week.
Redefining Radio.
CFM.